There we go, and I'll be right back. Well, welcome everyone to the ASH IOC meeting. It is January 16th, 2020. It's 6:05, and let's go ahead and begin. Based on who we've heard on the phone already, I think we've met quorum. We have a few others that indicated that they would be coming here. Hopefully they'll make it here. Before we begin, does anyone have any disclosure of conflict of interest? On the phone? Okay. Well, as you know, we have a special guest tonight. We will be kicking off that presentation when we get an adapter, so we'll go ahead and go through the first few things. Has everyone been able to read and review the last month's meeting minutes? And did you have any corrections, or do I hear a motion to accept the meeting minutes as presented?
I'll make a motion to accept the meeting.
So Ashley motions. Do I hear a second?
I'll second.
Natalie seconds. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Okay. We'll skip over the update from ADOA for obvious reasons and the review of the action items. So I did meet with ASH administration via telephone, going over some of the items that we asked them about last month. One, are support groups committed on site? Are there any outside agencies currently providing classes? And I sent it out. Therapeutic groups are provided by hospital staff. And in the past, STARS, which is Stand Together and Recover, has trained some forensic patients as peer mentors, which to me that means it was in the past, but it's not currently ongoing right now. Mark Center, which is now COPA, provides vocational training. When they're on site, they do 1 hour of vocational training and 1 hour of time that our patients are working. So 1 hour of training, 1 hour of work, supported employment. Patients independently participate in correspondence courses through various entities. Rio Salado has historically been the main institute of education for their patients. Once a patient obtains privileges, which allows them independent passes, they're able to attend various schools in the community. This is primarily an option available to forensic CRU patients. To me, civil patients aren't allowed off campus, so I think it's only forensic.
Right.
Yeah. Next, on the incident and accident, 5665 is a non-reportable incident. And 6506, which is the one that reported a patient swallowed, he told someone he swallowed an object, and we wondered why they waited until kind of the next day to send him to the hospital. And they said, per the report, the duty physician was immediately notified, and per the nursing review, the patient was sent off-site for further evaluation and treatment. But to me, still, that was the next day.
Yeah.
So the William Kerr question of why.
Why it took the day. Yeah. Unless I looked and see if it was a late night thing.
Overnight.
Yeah. I should check that before we request more.
Right.
Okay. And the next one was incident report 6122 is also a non-reportable incident. 6212 reports a physical altercation on the forensic unit. When the video was recorded, there was no concerns noted. The behavioral health techs are commonly assigned to supervise the hall and are adjacent to the day room, but staff members occasionally go into the nutrition room, the nurse's station, or other areas to attend to patient needs. This was the one where the patients were fighting.
And someone had to come.
And so they had to yell for staff to come help, and mm-hmm. the patients actually broke up the fight. And we were wondering why there wasn't staff present in the room. That's why. Next one was, at what point are families and guardians notified of an incident? Are there circumstances when guardians would not be notified? And they said the hospital social worker department notifies guardians within one business day when a patient is involved in any seclusion or restraint, sustains any injury, is hospitalized, has interaction with law enforcement, or is involved with in an assault. There are no circumstances in which our policy wouldn't require this notification within one business day, but other incidents may not require a guardian notification, such as physician appointments, visits, or contact by other individuals or agencies. What I've noticed, and as I go through the incident reports, I note how long it takes them to notify. And sometimes when there's no guardian notification, I'm not sure if there's a guardian or not.
Right.
So it's hard to tell. And from what I can see, it's usually the next day. Sometimes it's up to 3 days. Mm-hmm. I don't know whether it's a weekend. I didn't have time. About 85 pages of reports were loaded yesterday. So you don't have a lot
of time.
Did they say one business day? So does that just mean Monday to Friday? Is that why it could take 3 days? One
probably. Yeah. I'd have to check. I mean, we could check on the dates here. If the 20th, 12/20, I'm not sure what date that was, but down below here, they notified, Leon's probably stuck outside. They notified them on the 23rd.
Hi, Leon. Are you outside?
I'll come get you.
Okay.
Cool. Okay.
12/20 was a Friday, and the 23rd was a Monday.
So that's why.
Mm-hmm.
So it is one business day. I'll be right back. I'm going to get a scratch in that house.
Well, while Lori steps out, she wrote the names down on the phone for me. I have Kim, Kathy, Rebecca. Who's the other person on the phone?
Frederica from Access.
Okay, Frederica. Yes, that is who it is. I just couldn't read it. I'm sorry.
Leon's here. Alice is stuck outside the Marshall. Okay. Usually the guard stays longer.
He had to come back to let me in, and then he...
Where do they call it, Alice? I'm actually here standing outside trying to...
That was bad.
I tried. Yeah, you were close.
the same as what else we've been around.
Okay. It's 1740 West Adams. What's that? And when you get here, text my cell phone and we'll come get you. Okay? Okay. Yeah, what I do, I generally go to Washington, and right when you hit where the Capitol is, I turn left and I park in that structure, but 1740 West Adams will get you here. Okay, thanks. Bye. Sorry about that, guys.
Okay, where were we? So I think that they are complying with calling guardians. So we do have complaints from Deborah Brokowski saying that she's never notified. So I just don't know why. But she's never notified on time. Next one.
Could it be explaining the one day business day?
No, she said she's never
notified.
Yeah, she said when her husband, not her husband, when her son has been transferred to the hospital, when he's involved in the situation, she's never notified. And so we've asked for this, and I said, well, I can only speak from my experience. I was notified.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, other people, if you have family members, we can ask them. So I don't know. Yeah, she isn't here tonight, so. Next one, we wanted to know if patients have access to their medical records because some have indicated to Alice and I that they're not, and are there any limitations? And as we, I think as Rebecca mentioned last time, it's what we suspected. They have the patient or patient representative is entitled to inspect and have copies made of their medical records. Requests for copies or inspections received from a patient or representative are forwarded to the attending psychiatrist for review and determination of appropriateness of release. There are limitations. So if the release of information would jeopardize the health, safety, security, custody, or rehabilitation of the individual or others or the safety of any officer, employee, or other person at ASH, they would not release. Okay. At that time. Yeah, likely later when they're no longer in that situation, I would think.
That makes sense.
Okay. And our last question to ask was regarding some complaints that we heard that when jobs get posted, they don't get posted timely, and by the time a job shows up, it's already taken. Mm-hmm. So we asked if they could use a bulletin board or post it in another manner, so people have easy access. And they said within the hospital, rehab coordinates with a patient's treatment team to identify therapeutic vocational opportunities. These jobs are identified specifically for patients based on their abilities, vocational needs, so postings would not be an effective tool. Forensic patients are on CRU are eligible to work off-site, and those patients work with rehab to identify opportunities based on their skills and interests. Any comments? Okay. Do you want to give us an update on ADOA? And maybe that'll give Alice a few moments to get here because I know she's a psychiatric nurse and was really interested in the grievance and appeals.
I do. We did receive business cards for the MSP here. So business cards. After meeting location, email address for us, and the cadence of your meeting, so how often you guys meet. I do believe Larry sent over the invite for the task force meeting tomorrow in regards to recommendation number 3 and 6. So that is set up for tomorrow. He also did send out the manual. That has been approved. I believe from ADOA that's currently all we have as in regards to updates. Yeah, that would be it.
Unless you want more. Uh-huh. For those of you on the phone, next time you come in person, we have giveaways. you wouldn't want to miss it. So I'm going to keep you in suspense. But if anyone would like to call in tomorrow, is it open to all IOC members or just the chair?
I believe just the chair spoke for a meeting, and I believe moving forward, if you're not able to attend, then a representative can attend on your behalf. But I do believe at the time it's going for a chair.
And I have meetings back-to-back, so I'm going to call in.
So
what they're talking about is the task force. Was it the governor's task force, or was it the...
It was by the executive order of the governor. Correct.
And ASH had two areas that they failed to improve in, improve upon, and the task force is trying to work on those areas. So we were sent an invitation to go or call into a meeting tomorrow to work on those items. And am I allowed to share once we're done with the rest of the IOC?
Absolutely. I would definitely encourage you to come back and share that with your committee. Yeah, because I believe that's the whole purpose behind the statewide meetings, is to ensure that there is a voice of each committee at the table.
Yeah.
Statewide.
Okay. Well, thank you. Okay. Now, I think we can go ahead. Should we give her a few more minutes? Oh, there she is. She's here. Okay.
I'll be right back. Let's go set up the alarm again.
I'm doing well. I'm dead. Yes.
Everybody's going to hate you. Everybody's going to hate you today. The cord. No, it's not the right
cord. Oh, no.
What I
didn't do this time, I normally do is bring my handouts for everyone that's here.
I don't share it, but
my screen is
still on my work. But I'm pulling up on my computer. Do you have your computer? Yeah. Yeah. Did it have our HDMI
people? Or? Yeah, well, it only has one.
That's the problem. I can't find, so my connection here will connect to your reference pro.
Yeah.
But the USB that I have does not connect. Let me go check a price. I just need that one cable.
Well, wait, if you have it on your computer, you have your computer with you?
Yes.
So if you put it over there, and they look at it, if you all, and then DJ
can go
online, I mean, right?
And because you came, you said yes, too.
The only one that's logged in on the computer.
Hold on.
Can you see
who this one? Yeah.
I don't know if she just called
in
that
she's on her.
I don't think I brought meeting minutes. I did bring the response of Ash. I sent this out ahead, too.
Oh, but it's not going to go on that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I can put it on mine. I have it.
They are going to now, as soon as we figure it out. Guys on the phone, this will be a second before we get started.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
I guess we can give our peer support updates to Ashley and others while they're figuring out the technology to get the presentation. So, Ashley, would you like to report?
So, I reached out to Suzanne Legander at STAR, who seemed really excited about offering some peer certification training and job skills training. She indicated STAR, as we knew previously, had worked with ASH and very interested. She thinks that there's still a vendor at ASH, so we need to confirm that. I followed up and asked if those who had participated in STAR previously were in CRU or any other unit and asked about whether they would require funding or if they could bill Medicaid and haven't heard back yet. So I would call it and I will follow back up.
Five members here.
So I should have another update, but it's positive.
And I did ask administration. I said, if peer-run community support group if they want to come in and do peer mentoring, or they want to come in and do substance abuse groups, or NA, or AA, or any of the other eight, how do they go about doing it? And they said that you call ASH and ask for the rehabilitation department, because everything comes in through that department.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So hopefully by the next meeting, we might have somewhat of a plan in place moving forward.
And anyone on the phone, were you able to reach out to any of the peer-run organizations?
Well, this is Kathy Basher. I have in the past, and I reached out and actually facilitated STAR doing a peer training in the past. So I'm happy with whatever happens with that, just as long as we have some trainings.
Yeah, that'd be great. As far as the education, you know, I got some quotes and process on how people at ASH could go to college and get a degree. And what and I got numbers, and I met with Jim Runt, who's head of kind of the students at ASU, and they gave me the numbers. I met with a lady that's over community philanthropy organizations. She's meeting, now that I gave her that information, she's meeting and is supposed to get back to me to see if they're willing to fund and how much they're willing to fund. The part that I'm going to have to follow up on, it's really cool because if people have been out of school a long time where they don't even know if they're ready for college, they have a new opportunity where you can take, I think it's 3 or 4 classes online, and you don't pay for them until you successfully complete them. So if you're having trouble struggling with it, it helps you work on the things you need to work. And by the time you're done with those courses, they will admit you into ASU. So it's it wasn't that expensive. I have to go look at my notes. Whether it was,
say how much is it?
Wasn't a lot. It was. I mean, it's relative, right? But it was a couple $100 for that. So I thought it was really good. So I'll know more about that. But now I'm going to reach out to Rio Salado because administration said that a lot of people at ASH go through that route. So I'll try to get some numbers on that. Yeah. But it'll be affordable if I can get foundations to underwrite it. They asked me how much, and I said, how much do you want to give me? Whatever you're willing
you
to give, we're willing
that?
To take.
Lori, how do you get, is it grant writing, or how do you do that?
I just asked some friends of mine that have no philanthropy funds, and I said, do you have any that are really interested in education for vulnerable populations? And then I had the discussion, so they're reaching out to a bunch of them. So we'll see. But there's funding for almost everyone. I just heard today of a woman that is getting her esthetician or whatever, when you,
cosmetologist.
The year-long degree. She's getting the whole thing underwritten by a grant because she's a single mother. So, I mean, there's grants out there if you look, which is good.
So we are having a bit of technical difficulty. The cords that are here don't match up to my computer, even though I brought other cords. If it's okay with you, we can share my computer screen with you five while CJ goes over it. If it's okay, CJ, am I able to share this PowerPoint with them afterwards or some kind of summary afterwards just so they have it on hand?
We made it special for them.
Perfect.
You want me to set on my computer here?
I have mine right here open.
But
the PowerPoint already?
I'm trying to get Frederick to open it for any of the members that are online.
Could I share my screen with them?
Yes,
you can. If they are joining online so they can see the screen, I am sharing that with you all.
I don't see an online.
Thing.
Yeah, it's not in the invitation.
Can I set in folks that are over the phone? Do you have access to your email at this time?
People on the phone, if you have access to your email, I think Veronica's going to send you a link.
Correct.
So they could view it through their computer. I will respond to your annual report being sent out. That has everybody in the committee, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Where is my annual report? I sent it out again, so I've added more to it.
I did send over that link now. If you open that link through your web browser, I will be sharing my screen so you can see the PowerPoint.
Cool.
If you're going to log in from your computer, make sure you mute the speaker on your computer. That really loud noise that happens every time we open it.
Okay.
Did you guys get the link?
Mm-hmm.
Perfect.
So what is the, is it copper?
Okay. And it should be, you should be able to bring that.
Username is Cat?
Capital C. Do you guys want the folder code or do you guys
already know? This is asking me to download hang.
If you're on the computer, it's just a click. For those of you on the phone, do we need to give you a couple more minutes to view the screen?
What is the password?
I think I got it.
Perfect.
This is Frederick. That line is working.
I'm the Advocacy Administrator at Access. Part of my job is to oversee the Office of Human Rights. We regularly interact with the appeals and grievance processes and service to our special assistance members that we represent, and then also our technical assistance provision that we give to family members, guardians, and members themselves that aren't special assistants. All right, so Lori asked us to come and kind of go over the rules for the SMI grievance process. Since you guys are the ASH IOC and ASH is its own mental health agency, I added some information and some rule citations for you guys, so that you'll get this packet from us, so that you guys can kind of see where the variation is between the streamlining process and the REBA system, and then how that process changes when our members are placed in a mental health agency that is solely run by a government agency. So they kind of take the whole role of plan or REBA. Does that make sense? So we'll start off with the grievances, and then we'll move into the appeals. And if you guys have any questions, please feel free to ask. Again, if it's something I can't answer, we need to direct it over to ASH. We can do that. I know Lori has some preliminary questions that she's already sent over to ASH, but I let her know I could not answer. So we'll let her jump in with those if those come up. Okay? So first,
Lori?
I'm waiting at Ms.
Okay. It's SMI grievance. What is an SMI grievance? It's an allegation that a member's rights have been abridged by a mental health agency, either by act, omission, or condition. All of this is described in Arizona Administrative Code R-921. So I put the actual definition of mental health agency onto that slide for you guys, because this is where we see that definition for our Arizona rule of mental health agency includes inpatient facilities.
Okay. You might have already said this. Is this PowerPoint? Will we have access to the
Steph to it after.
Okay. Well, I'm going to send it to you.
Oh, thank you.
No, she hasn't yet because she forgot to ask me, and I forgot to tell her that this was just made for you guys. You can use it. If you're going to create your own presentations, the only thing I would ask is take it off the Access template, or if you alter it in any way, please take it off the Access.
Thank you.
But that way you'll also have the notes that I put in the bottom that I don't always sit on the slide. Okay? So in order to understand grievances, we kind of have to go over what are rights, right? Because grievances are basically saying that my right has been violated. And so the SMI rights include all rights that are afforded for us in all federal and state statutes and regulations, and then there's a whole new layer on top of that. That was built into our rules to protect us in my specific Arizona. So they're different from anywhere else that you may have been. We put some examples of those rights, the rights to their medical records, and as we were saying earlier, there are some caveats to that if it were to cause some sort of distress to a member, threat to a staff. The right to the care continuum, the right to consent and treatment, the right to privacy. It would be exhaustive for me to try and pull all the SMI rights onto a slide, so I just put some on there, but I did put the rule reference for you guys. So there's some things that are different for hospitals and inpatient units, not just ASH, but inpatient units around the state where confidentiality or privacy may be different, like opening mail, or even our unsecured behavioral health residential facilities out in the field may open mail related to different healthcare stuff that they have provisions over that are stressed to a person, but they do get consent for that. So I put a few notes in that slide for you guys if you want to look into them.
One thing, we've had some questions about and some complaints about some patients that are concerned that when we visit as an IOC, we always go two members or more, but usually Jackie's in the room, which I'm fine with, but some people have wondered or have alleged that Jackie runs back and gets the people in trouble for what they tell us, and I said, I don't believe that to be true. Do they have the right to not have a hospital representative in the room when we're talking to them? Or is that a hospital rule?
That is going to be a person-specific rule when we're talking about the Arizona State Hospital. So most of our members that we have in there, they're under a court order. And so depending on the extent of that court order, the reason for that court order and the threat and danger, there are sometimes the hospital staff has to be. I know that in practice, the hospital has tried to use what was the ombudsman and now the patient advocate, Jackie, as that staff member to make the patients feel as comfortable as possible. You know, one of the security guards standing in there. It's person-specific when we're talking about the state hospital. Okay. So they may have some overarching policy about not leaving unattended, things like that. But, I mean, for family visits and for your type of visits, I would ask specifically, and it might just be the patient.
You know what I think, though? Jackie actually has been a good resource.
I feel the same way. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know that it's Jackie. I think that it's the hospital retaliating against that Gary who knows the grievances. I think that us coming in and discussing it with them is like maybe some sort of a threat. I don't know. We don't make it a threat. We just try and advocate. I feel that them just simply meeting with us is where the retaliation comes in. Because I've actually been able to clarify a lot of things with Jackie. Even if I take her to the side, not for a patient. Or sometimes, then I'm able to go back to the patient with Jackie and explain.
Now, she's been helpful with us when we've been on visits. And we're like, what is going on with that?
That's actually a really good idea.
I get a very good
policy, you know, you can look that up. But
this
here's
is
the one
that feeling from her.
If you really believe that there's been any type of retaliation or that you're seeing some type of retaliation within any mental health agency and service provision, you know, in our behavioral system, it's your duty to report that.
We hear that all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, if there's not a visit we go on, that, or we get phone calls, or we have letters now saying that once they file grievances, that the staff retaliates. Not all the staff, obviously. And what I've said, because I know, I said, well, if you don't file a grievance and they don't know about it,
right,
and if they retaliate, then we need to know about that.
Right.
So it's hard. I asked the head of grievances, that process, can't remember the gentleman's name.
Karen?
Yes. I was sitting next to him in the forensic community meeting before it started, and I said, I know they're trying, because it used to be you had to hand your grievance to the staff, right?
Right.
And now they've put in black boxes,
right,
to try to remove it one layer.
Mm-hmm.
But still, it's when you're in a closed system.
Well, it's a closed system, but staff can't.
It happens all over the place. So your focus is really on one mental health institution, but the truth is, or agency, the truth is that it would be uncomfortable for anyone. So imagine I'm at Makayo's and I order my food and I'm not happy with it. I have this choice to make. Do I want to send it back? Right? Because I have an innate fear of retaliation.
Yeah.
The kitchen,
yeah,
staff is going to
sit on it.
Yeah. So I'm either going to eat it or I'm not. Right? And if I eat it, then I'm going to be worried about it later. If I don't eat it, the waiter is inevitably going to come over and ask me why I'm not eating it. Now I'm uncomfortable. So something as minor as that, magnify that. Now you're symptomatic. Now you are in a placement against your will. You cannot leave. You're watched all the time. And although, yes, it's the safest place for you, it does not feel that way. And those people that are there to protect you and to give you counseling and therapy, it doesn't always feel that way. So what happens when a member initiates a grievance? What's the first thing the hospital has to do?
Investigate.
They have to go to the member.
Yes.
And give them a piece of paper in writing that says, we got your grievance.
And they know exactly. They know exactly where it came from, too.
Exactly. They have to. They're required. So we'll go through the process, but as you're working with your members, a good thing as an advocate, what I like to do, because I hear that too when I go to the hospital, is tell them what has to happen. They have to come back. Well, then they ask me all these questions, and that's just making me uncomfortable, and it's abuse. That I hear almost every time a person calls the Office of Human Rights asking me to help them fight retaliation after they filed the grievance. They feel abused by the investigator's questions. And the way I diffuse that as an advocate is explain the process to them. Show them that our Arizona state laws make that investigator come and ask.
I don't think it's investigators that they're telling us that it's particular staff that they've complained about, then treat them.
Well, they need a report. But I'm saying it happens all the time, and not just at the hospital, but imagine that as an advocate when you're in there. And even when we come in there to talk to them, myself, and I'm sure when you, if they're not familiar with you, it takes a while to build that report. Tell them what you do while you're there. Because you're just another lady in a button-up shirt to them, right? Which means you're not another patient, and you're not my mom, so you've got to build that rapport first. So there's a lot of that.
Just real quick, another reason why, too, I think we both believe this, is because it is across the board, same statement. Also, I had mentioned to a few people at St. Luke's where I was working, I was very interested in working at ASH, especially with forensic patients, because I am not afraid to work there. I care a lot about prison reform. I care a lot about these people. And I was told, don't you dare. One particular nurse was sent over to me to tell me her story. She went to report another nurse for some very serious allegations, which she witnessed. And that nurse said, I know people on the outside. Don't you even think about reporting me.
I know.
She put in her 2 weeks. So
I know.
They said to me, Alice, don't you dare anywhere but ASH.
Well, and that could be why they have such a hard time
keeping to death.
Or,
yeah, but somebody like me, they know. I couldn't live with myself if I didn't report that.
Right.
What
we
she said, she saw.
Right.
I just couldn't sleep at night.
Right.
So, Leon, did you ever see that when you were there? Did you see any retaliation?
You know, I filed several grievances, and I didn't have any retaliation. I'll be honest. You know, in fact, my issues were resolved in a rather timely fashion. There was a point where I was missing some CDs, and, you know, I had given it to staff, and staff said they put it somewhere, and it wasn't there. And so they searched and searched, and couldn't find it, and then eventually they turned up. I was missing a few things. I didn't file a grievance to follow up on that. But I kind of took it as a loss, you know, because anybody could have had access to the CD, so it was kind of like, I already knew what the answer was probably going to be, you know, sorry, but, you know, at least you have most of your stuff, is what I kind of figured. I know that staff was no longer there afterward, but that was due to something else. But, you know, that's my own personal experience with grievances.
But they weren't abusive to you in nature.
No.
Because this is what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is the serious abuse of this nurse or witness. And some of what we're talking about is abusive in nature.
I've seen other people file grievances and claim, you know, that they were being abused after filing the grievance. But after watching some of those patients and their behavior in the hospital, I question that. I do. Because they're not.
Okay.
I question that only because, you know, it's not like they were exactly, you know, treating the staff with all due respect and dignity as well. You know what I mean? And so you kind of have to look at it from both sides. And, you know, I know we don't get a chance to see what happens, but I have seen it. I've seen where, you know, patients can be, sometimes be very disrespectful.
But to me, that's part of my job.
True. I agree.
I expect it.
I agree.
But what it is, it's therapeutic interaction then, or I don't deserve this right now, and why don't you just, you know, go find a private space and, you know, calm down. You teach them coping skills, because this is a part of being a psychiatric patient for some people.
Okay.
The good news about this in my grievance and appeal process is it doesn't matter if at the initiation, whether it is real or perceived, the filing is to be investigated, and the outcome can be appealed if the person doesn't agree with it. So we'll go through that whole process.
Perfect.
This next slide is just another list of different types of rights, the rights for protection from abuse, neglect, and exploitation. Not an exhaustive list, very long in our statute, but just for reference to civil or other legal rights and freedoms and freedom from discrimination is the right we all have that goes all the way across every different type of agency. Even Ashley, I like to put that slide in there, that our folks cannot be discriminated against based on race, creed, religion, sexual preference, age, or disability, including their mental health condition. More rights. The right to vote, all these civil rights. I'm telling you, there's a lot of cases of rights, but I figured if you get new folks, it might be helpful to kind of have a different place with one. Okay. So the FMI agreements, who can file agreements? I get this question a lot from family members who are not guardians, from neighbors, from healthcare workers that come in contact with the situation. Anyone, the member, the member's guardian, a designated representative, or any reasonable person may file on behalf of the member. The difference between who you are when you file may just change the outcome results that you're allowed to be privy to. So if you're a member's guardian, obviously you're going to be involved in that whole process, but if you're the member's neighbor, thank you for that information. We'll investigate it. You might not ever hear anything else unless that person themselves brings you into the picture later. So an investigator can't continue to release information to someone who doesn't have that authority, even if you're the reporting person.
Now, one of our people that come here to the meeting often showed us a letter last time. Did it show you? But showed us a letter from Access saying that they were no longer going to accept grievances from her. And she was she's the guardian. So we found that really odd. So we said we would ask. I'm sorry she isn't here tonight. But is that...
Do you know the nature of the grievances? Were they abused in nature?
We don't know. We just got a response that it was someone acting on behalf of someone else. It wasn't the signature on the letterhead, but it was someone acting on their behalf saying, you are no longer, essentially, you are no longer able to file any grievances. And she showed it to Ashley, who's an attorney.
I just know that we, there was a reason indicated.
Did you read the letter?
I didn't read the whole thing.
Yeah. She was just very upset showing us this letter.
Before the meeting?
Before the meeting, we didn't have time to.
It's a member's or a person-specific case, so we probably...
Yeah, can't do it here, but...
So maybe we can talk to her and get some clarification.
Get some, exactly.
Yeah, and we'll forward that. Okay.
I have a question. So are you going to wonder like why you might file a grievance?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we'll save it for that.
Okay. We're going to talk about how and then we'll talk about what.
Okay.
So grievance can be filed orally or in writing. Any employee of a mental health agency will assist a client in filing a grievance if asked. It's actually a rights violation if they refuse to assist. And another grievable offense. All grievances shall be accurately and completely reduced to writing on the approved form, so that depends if it's being taken in by a mental health agency that's not acting on its own governmental authority, so that's ASH. So everybody but ASH has to use the access form, and then ASH has their own form, but it's one form and it's required to be posted. What that means is, it does not mean, which is often misinterpreted by our members, that if they can't write, they can't file a grievance. What that means is that they can ask a mental health employee to help them, and it is that person's job to reduce it onto the form. The reason for that is so that we get what you believe was violated and what you want to happen altogether. Oftentimes, members will call customer service lines or whatever the REBA or health plan chooses to call their member service line, customer service line, and they'll say, my rights were violated, I wanted to investigate, and they hang up. And so it's difficult to get a resolution. Like, what would you like? Would you like to have if your rights were violated because they put a note in your charge that you don't think is true, you want it amended, if there's a process for that, you know, things like that. Do you want a corrective action plan? Do you want to be involved in that? Do you want to approve it? Do you not? Various things. So without that second piece, it's really hard for an investigator to do anything but tell you what they find, right? And they can't really help me here, right? I've got a member say, well, all I want them to do is say I'm sorry. That's perfect. Let's write that down.
Yeah.
They should say they're sorry if they hurt you, right? Okay. So upon receipt of the grievance, it is the mental health agency's responsibility to ensure the health and safety of the members. They can sometimes place other staff on leave if it involves a staff member abuse allegation or something like that. Remove the staff from caring for the member, so they may not place them on leave because there's not enough of an allegation that causes that. And that is up to the triaging investigator to decide at the agency themselves. Sometimes if it's really bad, you know, definitely once access or administration and ask for to get involved, it may require further action. But this is more the immediate action taken by like an administrator or an RN on the floor in a unit that says, oh, she just told me that staff slapped her. You need to get off the unit, staff. That has to happen immediately, right? And then it may take further action later, but there is an immediate safety response that's required no matter what.
I would like to answer your question even further. The more I think about it, the memories come back.
Yeah.
I do remember there was a time where someone was retaliated against and they did not deserve it at all. And I bore witness. This person was very respectful, very nice, very good person. And staff was threatening the person just like he would like, this is just as an example, walking by the room and he'd go, and then keep going.
So that's what they've told us, stuff that they try to antagonize and trigger because they know what their triggers are.
That I have seen.
Thank you.
It's weird to just keep going after hearing that.
Yeah.
That's terrible.
Well, that's why we're...
Hopefully you reported that.
That's why part of our annual report, there's something that we're asking for, which we help. Would help in this, and I think there's some uneasiness from the asset administration, but what we're asking for, and it's getting put into the legislature, so it's going to be an ask, but it's in our annual report also, is the surveillance systems at Ash are really antiques.
Oh, yes.
And some of them have tapes in them.
Yes.
You know, they're really old. Yeah. So I think what we're going to ask that they improve and replace both the forensic and civil, have less blind spots in the public areas, you know, with no one in the bedroom or bathroom, but all public areas should be viewable. And I want audio. Now, I don't want audio to be punitive, but I want audio. So if someone's saying, but they always do this to me, they can listen and say, they're right, staff is antagonizing. Or it can also help staff say, no, we were trying to de-escalate. I think it could be a great tool. And that's why I told the administration when they said, we don't want audio. I said, I think you need it. But I think it would be helpful. And
all right, so the big question I think you guys had was who investigates what types of grievances, which agencies? So physical abuse, sexual abuse, and misconduct or misconduct by staff, and then death is always investigated by Access Behavioral Health Grievance Appeals. Everything else would start at ESCO Clinic if it wasn't at ASH or ASH. And that's the mental health agency that is operated exclusively by a governmental entity, that means ASH. And so you get the whole citation there too. So you have which ones they should be forwarding to Access and which ones they should be triaging and investigating on their own. Questions on that? I know it was one of your bullets.
Mm-hmm. One of them was, how and why are grievances turned into complaints? We hear that one often. I file a grievance, they just downgrade it to a complaint.
Let's go to the next slide. All right, so when can a grievance be dispositioned without investigation? That's what that's called, and there's an entire section and rule on it. Basically what it means is within 7 days of receipt, an investigation, mental health agency or administration, that means if it comes directly to Access, may properly resolve a request for investigation without conducting a full investigation if it involves no dispute of facts. So if a member says, that staff slapped me, and video shows that staff slapped me, there's no dispute of facts. The investigation is done. We're going to just take action to protect you and the staff. So that's a little bit different. Is frivolous or unlikely. I was asleep and 17 aliens came into my room and harmed me. And if I leave my right cleaner, that can't be. Now those kinds, the ones that are that outlandish, I think as a mental health professional should be looked at to see if that your perception of what happened and make sure nothing did happen. It may not have been 17 aliens, but those type of what, which is so outlandish, it couldn't be. And then if it's filed outside the year, I think it's on the next slide, but if it can be resolved fairly and efficiently within 7 days without an investigation.
So these are all orgs, right? So we don't have two of those. And is it 7 business days or 7 business days?
So everything in RI-21, anything under 11 days means business days.
Okay.
And then anything over 11 days means calendar days. So at the top of every chapter, you'll see a time calculation or calculation of time, however they decide to word it for that particular chapter. And that's how it's defined in RI-21. And that goes all the way through from requesting a semi-determination evaluation through the COC process, which is supposed to start and finish with that whole chapter.
Another common set of circumstances where they summarily dispose is if there's an assault allegation at 1 in the morning, 3 in the morning, 5 in the morning, and they pull the tape and they can see
that
no one's
in or
out of the room.
Another impossible on the
state.
Yeah. That's
But could it be, I've never been in the patient areas. I'm in their rooms because I've never seen that. So I have toured Birch, but not any ones that are occupied. If they have a Jack and Jill, do they have any of those where they could go into each other's room?
I've never seen a Jack and Jill.
I'm not saying where they share. But if they did, then they would look at the film for the other room.
But you can't go in the bedrooms.
I've toured almost all of that hospital.
Yes.
Even the older wings that aren't used anymore, and I have never seen a draining patient room by a bathroom. You always have to exit a room to come back.
Okay.
There are some units on the forensic side that I haven't seen, but I would imagine in forensics that they wouldn't have a common place in between patient places without visibility.
Yeah.
So you would have to ask out specifically if they have any of those, but I've never seen one. Okay, so once the grievance is, if it's not disposed, okay, or turned into a complaint. The other piece, and I think this is probably the big one, and I might have put it further in the slide, but you did bring it up, so let's talk about it. When is a grievance turned into a complaint? So grievances, if you ask to use the SMI grievance process, are specific to SMI rights, rules, and services. So if I try and file an SMI grievance because I don't like my influence, this will be turned into a complaint and sent to DHS. Okay. If I feel that something physical health or outside of the behavioral health service realm, so we had a lot of complaints, or if it falls under COT, that's the other one. So if they say my rights are being violated because I'm being kept on this unit against my will and I need mall privileges, if their COT order has been amended to keep them on the unit or something like that, that will be disposed of as a complaint. They'll get a written response that says we processed this as a complaint. This is what the words in your court order or whatever it is. So that happens a lot more at ASH than probably anywhere else because they have so many people in the civil commitment process. And that's when we get to what can and can't be appealed or grieved. There's always a caveat for that Article 5, which covers the court order treatment section. And so if it's written into a court order, it's not within the scope of the SMI appeal grievance process. I'll answer your question.
When they turn it into a complaint and the patient gets notification of that, do they explain why?
They should.
Okay.
The rules say that they have to give them a written explanation. Delivery of explanations depends on the message carrier, obviously, but as long as it's written. But every decision can be appealed. It just depends on which system it's going to go to. So we've had some recent inquiries over at ASPOHR about why was my, I filed a grievance and some doctor at the Department of Health Service sent me a response that went through this complaint process for medical, it was a medical issue. It was a physical health issue, and it needed a medical doctor. So the allegation was something about a doctor on one of the units. This is an example, not personally identified. an allegation of a doctor on one of the units prescribing either the wrong medication or failing to prescribe a medication for a physical health condition. Those aren't going to be worked out by an SMI grievance investigator. You need another medical doctor to look at the medical reasoning that medical doctor decided to treat or not treat and in which fashion to make sure that that's consistent with proper practice. That can't go through this process. So it happens sometimes.
If you get, we have one gentleman that often complains, he shares with us that he has a lot of pain and he's on a lot of meds, but one thing that really helps him, I think he's got arthritis from a lot of injuries, is taking showers.
Well, showers, and there was distraction technique.
Yes.
And video.
The allegation is, and I think it was a grievance, that staff is retaliating against him and no longer letting him take showers when he needs to. So, I mean, to us, I'm like, let's take a shower.
That was open in the investigation process.
Yeah.
When you're looking at a mental health agency, a cure facility, when you're going to have to, you guys probably have to decide, is this civil or is this forensic, and is it safe or is it not? So they have certain times of day that cafe is open, and I would assume that showering and stuff like that is pretty regulated as well, because of just keeping supervision on everybody when they are needed. So that would be another asked question. But if a member says, I feel I've been retaliated against and I'm not being allowed to take a shower when I need it,
that does violate several rights, and it should be investigated. Now, the end result may be your rights weren't violated because here's why this happened, and it didn't jeopardize your health and safety, and it didn't do this, but they still deserve and have the right to that full investigation process and then that investigation report that tells them why, and if they have a burden, it tells the authority why.
I remember him specifically also talking about, of course, the showers, which are very helpful, but distraction techniques, which I thought was wonderful that he was being a drug seeker since he already had polypharmacy. I don't know. I was just surprised they couldn't even find other ones, even though there is limited TV time, there is limited gaming time.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It seemed like the shower was at a... maybe a time, not normal shower time. But
yeah, yeah, that's why I was thinking about other distraction techniques, because he said they do work.
All of those examples that are brought to you guys by the patients should be investigated, for sure. But they're all going to be individual specific. Thinking of unit specific and the reason for commitment specific. So your guys' job as volunteers is very difficult.
It is, yeah.
And it's a very, you know, complicated system, so, you know, out here on the other side of the world is pretty black and white, right? You know, it did or it did not happen, and they have this right, or they don't. But in there, really, you have so many caveats that you are going to have to work with those investigators and those, we'll keep wanting to call her an ombudsman, I think, patient advocate, as they call Jackie, you know, and build those relationships and make recommendations for, like you're doing. That's excellent.
So what I'm getting is that whenever you get someone who says something that, even if it's outlandish, we need to be helping them file a grievance every time.
I mean, if they want you to.
I mean, we should ask.
Yeah.
But,
Or, you know, a lot of the ones, that come, they don't have files, they typically want OHR to do something about it. I don't know if you guys get that thing. They filed it already. They got their answer. They don't like it. There's appeal processes. We'll get into that for that, and we've helped some folks from them too. But sometimes, you know, if you hear enough of it at OHR, when we're looking at all the appeals and grievances and the outcomes and the decision letters, OHR sees them for every special assistance person from all the different mental health agencies and contractors, for special assistance only, but from all of them. And, you know, if we see trends that several members are complaining that when staff are not in this unit, you know, they're getting into fights and they're having to do this, then I would make a recommendation, like you're doing now, that maybe we need some more eyes on the floor or video or whatever, you know, so there's different ways that you'll be able to help those members. But if you ever see anything that you think could be abuse or something, you have to report it. If a member asks you for help, you don't fall into the requirement of a mental health employee that you have to, like you're violating their rights if you don't. But as an advocate in our system, it would be awesome if you did help them.
The last piece of the complaint reason process is that complaints are often, they don't rise to the level of the grievance because the grievance has to be an alleged rights violation. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times they start as complaints and then they continue, or they started grievances and then they bumped down to the complaint because there might be, oh, I don't like what's served for lunch, or I only like strawberry yogurt and I'm always getting raspberry yogurt, or
I wish for problems were the
problem. I know,
but those are our good examples.
I totally forgot the injury with Erica. This is
Erica. Yeah, that's okay. First, the Office of Human Rights, not for the Office of Human Rights, contracted conflict advocate. So Erica does all of our investigations and technical assistance for the hospital because of the sensitivity and the level of acuity that we have over there. So she's going to jump in and help me because she does all the action stuff. All right. Field grievance decisions.
We need the process
ahead of yourself. So there's timeliness for the process. So we have 5 days to acknowledge, I believe that was on the previous slide, 7 days to assign an investigator. So that sometimes gets interpreted like 5 days and then 7 days, not the case. 5 days. And it's 7 days. There's separate options. So
they run concurrent
at the same time. Yeah. So from receipt of the grievance. I didn't have 5 days to type up the letter and tell you where your guardian, and I got it. And I have 7 days from that same day to assign an investigator, even if I'm assigning myself, and I have to let you know who that is.
And you have to be SMI to fall under the protections of the SMI guidelines. So if you're at ASH, which I found hard to believe, but it happens.
Yes,
that there are
I know.
At ASH
that are not
SMI.
Yeah.
Determined.
I know, and it's confusing.
Yeah. And what happens is they're not afforded, but they are afforded another procedure that they can use.
It's a very different type of insurance and every different type of hospital, so whether they're in ASH or just what's working at behavioral has an appeal or grievance process. Usually it's called member complaint line or whatever, and those are all required to be published on that entity's website or given in a member handbook.
So they can go through the Joint Commission and Bureaus of Medical Facilities licensing.
They sure can.
If they know that. So
okay.
They can tell the people that are not designated SMI.
Right, exactly. And that information is just like the information on SMI filing grievances and the information for the Office of Human Rights. It's required to be posted throughout.
In the facility?
Okay. Yeah. They don't have to put it as big and colorful as I make them do it for OHR, but they do have to do it. All right, so they have the 7 days, and then from the date of assignment, so you'll see the face-to-face interview of filing party within 10 days of investigator appointment. So that often gets confused as well by members because they know they have 10 days, but that 10 days starts after the 7 day mark or the date that an investigator was assigned. So if an investigator was assigned on day 3, they have to have face-to-face by day 13. If an investigator was assigned on day 7, we have to have by day 7, face-to-face by day 17. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. Okay, but those get confusing. That's why I like to point those out, is the 5 days and the 7 days run at the same time, but the rest of them start from appointment of investigator. Okay? Face-to-face interview with the accused, if there is an accused, within 15 days of the appointment. And then you have time to interview any other people that might witness and therefore be privy to what happened, be able to offer some information. And then you have 30 days from the appointment. So again, we go back to the day that the investigator was appointed, not the day the grievance was received, to prepare your written decision. And then the agency director has 5 days once they get that report, send their final determination. They can reject the report and send it back, and the clock starts over again. So, but if the agency director says, investigator, you did not interview Sam, and I know he was on the unit that day because I checked the roster, this has to go back to incomplete, then they would have more time. Right? Any timeline that's afforded for and rule can be extended, but there is an extension process for that. And if your case or one of your members' cases has had an extension granted, that documentation should be viewable, and if copies are always required to go to the member or the member's legal guardian. I'm going to take your home meeting. I'm sorry. So, appeal rights. So, after the final investigation is done, agency director accepts it, they issue a decision. Every decision comes with appeal rights. For decisions that are issued by a contractor or mental health agency, and again, when we say that, we mean ASH, the grievant has 30 days to appeal for an using the administrative appeal process. So this is the only time a grievance turns into an appeal. It's either a grievance or it's an appeal until now. So once they make a decision, an appeal is wanting to overturn a decision. So we're going to appeal, and we have 30 days to do that. If Access issues the decision, then Access will issue a decision on your appeal request within 15 days. So you have 30 days. If you do it on day 2, Access has 15 days from the date of receipt to issue our decision. So when the behavioral grievance and appeal office investigator looks back through that investigator's notes, they sometimes need to go back out and re-interview. They'll interview the patient, they might re-interview the witnesses, they might even interview that investigator, depending on what they need to do. That's why they have that 15 days. So it's very rare that an investigator in that department is just going to take a piece of paper and be like, I agree with that, looks good, So they have about 15 days to do their due diligence to make sure they either do agree with it or they don't agree with them. No questions on that, sir? Okay. So Access will either accept the contractor's decision on that by that 15th day, or they will remand the matter back to the contractor for further investigation. So that process can sometimes get weird when it comes to Access and ASH, because Access has no oversight of ASH. We all know that. So that part luckily doesn't have to happen a whole lot. We either agree or we disagree, but either way. Once Access accepts the final contractor's investigation, you then get another set of appeal rights. And these appeal rights have to be exercised within 30 days again, a new 30 days from the receipt of that decision. And at this point, the request would take you to an administrative hearing. We all know the administrative hearing process.
So you said Access has no oversight over the state hospital. So does that mean ADH Access directly?
Yes. So Access, a lot of our behavioral health units that we have now at Access used to be part of ADHS. It was called the Division of Behavioral Health Services, so ADHS. And in 2016, almost everything about behavioral health moved to Access because we're working as a nation towards integration, right? So why would behavioral health be over here? The Arizona State Hospital is a different beast because it's managed solely by DHS, so it stays there. But they don't have a behavioral health grievance and appeal office like we do in that relationship. So we carry some of that looking into their outcomes and the second level when we get to the appeal section, but then if we push it to the Office of Administrative Hearing.
Okay.
After that. But we do that for everybody anyway. So,
right.
Is that like an audit?
No, it simply just protects the rights of the member. So with the way it works in both worlds, so in the REBO world or in the ASH world, is if the investigator works for the place that might be responsible for a rights violation, somebody else should look at it before that decision gets finalized. So the members have the right to have somebody other than...
I asked that.
Yeah. Because if that was just the final decision, I mean, I felt glorified now. So that's what that process is designed for, both the grievance and appeal process. And so, yeah, the initial investigation, because we want it done timely, and we want them to be familiar with the grounds where it happened, with the agencies that might have been involved, with the members that might involve, that the law was written to let that initial investigation go there, but the law did not allow for it to stop there. There has to be a secondary look at all of that process, and it's either accepted or rejected before it goes through.
Oh, I asked if we could have an outside independent overview on appeals, and Ash said their policy does not include such a process.
Well, that's, and I think Ash might have been looking at that the same way that I did when I read that one. I thought you meant outside of Article 4 in R921. So this secondary opinion where it comes to Access from ASH is outside of ASH, but it's not outside of the R921 SMI appeal agreement process. So I thought you meant like an independent investigator.
I wonder if that could happen too, but what happens if you guys decide you don't agree with what ASH agrees with? You can't go ask Dad who wins because they don't have to listen to you, right?
Well, they do. Because the rules say they do.
Well, the rules say they have to.
It doesn't happen. And it has happened. And typically, it's downstairs in this very building where that gets settled. But there's no exception on that.
Well, I have a question, and I'm not sure exactly how to ask this, but I know that everything comes down to money. If things are proven to the grievances, you know, held up and everything, and does Access not pay, or, you know, other insurance? Like, how does that work if the patient's grievance is investigated and founded? What happens?
It depends. So there's no
monetary compensation for patients through this process. But if you're asking, like, would we pay a provider if we substantiated that they abused a client, would we pay them for that day? Like, if it was a daily rate that we were paying that provider? That's a question I think I probably have to ask our finance department. I don't think we have the right not to pay them. But every single outcome of a substantiated, whether it's appeal or agreement, so let's say grievance or crime, somebody might have hurt somebody else, and we're saying they did, has a corrective action plan involved. So if something is substantiated, here's what we're going to do to correct it. And that might be taking a provider's license. That might be putting them under some sort of ongoing oversight or reporting. It really
like
depends on the level.
Reporting to their board agency.
Yeah, it might be removing the licensure or reporting to the licensure board for a physician that acted inappropriately.
Or
everything goes somewhere, so that would be docket specific. So if the substantiation for abuse here and the substantiation for abuse here, we have two very separate corrective action plan. So if it was a doctor with a medical license, there's a medical licensing board that might need to be referred to.
It's from physical board,
yeah,
like nursing.
Yes.
And I've seen that.
So it's specific to that particular allegation, that particular case is how a corrective action is written. As a matter of fact, like when access issues corrective action, almost all of the ones that members even appeal access to the determination, so access sometimes will substantiate grievance after an agency says they unsubstantiate access. Well, Senate says, absolutely not, we don't agree with you. You're going to do X, Y, and Z. And sometimes members get that, and they're like, you know what, that's not enough for me. I'm going to appeal your decision because I don't think your corrective action plan is good enough. And they're completely within their right to do that.
Okay.
But all of that information and what happens if it's substantiated is completely based on whatever happens, what that specific situation happened.
And
to keep people safe.
Right. And there's also a section on the grievance form that asks what solution the patient wants. I don't know. Maybe I've seen it where they want an apology.
Yeah, I would say
yeah.
That's not always, it's included. If a member wants something
yeah.
like that, but I've also seen I want $1 million
yeah.
and I want them to have strawberry jelly at the cafeteria today. They can put whatever they want in there,
yeah.
but if they ask for something reasonable, like I want all the staff on my unit retrained in prevention and support because they're hurting people when they have to hold them. Seeing members actually write that sort of a request for corrective action plan all by themselves. That's pretty cool. You know, that's somebody that
yeah.
pretty knows what they're talking about.
And that happens.
That does happen.
Yeah,
yeah, those are always taken into at both levels, at the contractor or agency level, and then also at the access level. What
so basically like CPI retraining or whatever
oh, yeah,
you think
definitely.
Is appropriate. Okay.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when, like, for example, when my advocates write a grievance or they always include some level, if it was the result of maybe a case manager not knowing what a member's rights were, that they go back through their SOI grievance training as mandatory within 30 days of their hire, and they show competency in whatever way, depending on the situation. So, what,
okay.
you know, that's always the number one thing that we want to do is either adjust the policy or make sure that people are getting enhanced training so that this doesn't happen to somebody else.
And I think we, Laura, we talked about training.
I have that.
Thank you.
That's another ask, and that's in our mm-hmm. annual report. So I sent the annual report out, and they added more things for us. But before you guys leave, and I want to thank you, there was someone on the phone, one of the committee members asked me, texted me, called me about a news story that broke about a sexual abuse that happened at ASH.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was talking to administration, I said, I went through last month, so I don't see anything, so now I'm concerned. Where is
mm-hmm.
that? And they said, you missed it. It was back in October.
Mm-hmm.
So they gave me that incident number, so I pulled it up, and it was, I have some packets for you guys. That's probably yours. But basically what happened was a patient had the allegation that they were sexually abused, and it was turned in, and they found that there was cause,
mm-hmm.
and that they validated it. So that's all we got. So when I went back and I read, I said, okay, now what? You know?
Uh-huh. And the validation.
So they said, oh, yeah, we investigated. I said, can we have copies of that. And they said, okay. So they did give me the two incident reports of what they were going to do. So it was followed up. Mm-hmm. But again, like I said, the incident and accident reports by law have to be loaded to the portal by the 15th. Depending on our timing, like today's the 16th, you know.
Then you got to wait until next month.
Right. Or, you know, if, and I'm the one reviewing them.
Yeah.
So, if, you know,
and
sometimes
you're going through two ways. So Lisa uploads them, and then we have to download them and re-upload them. So that takes a little bit more.
So we don't always have a lot of time to really read through them to try to see what's going on or look at analysis. But this one, I'm glad that they sent us what they did about it and what they're continuing to do about it. So that was good.
Yeah.
And thank you, guys. You're welcome to stay for the
remaining. What advice would you give us when we are doing site visits and patients are talking to us about their grievances? Is there anything you think we could provide them with to maybe streamline the grievances? Advice you like good, bad, or maybe this would be like a separate thing.
The
like, good, bad things you see on grievances that we could maybe pass along.
This would be. When I go, I can tell you what I do.
Okay.
And you guys can do pretty much exactly what I do. But I'm a little more limited because I have to verify that that's mine. You guys can serve anybody that's on match grounds, correct?
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. So the first thing I do is ask that they have their copies that they are required to get. And I look at that. And then I ask them to tell me their story. And I look back at their copies to make sure they captured everything that they're alleging on the written part. Because if they didn't, and it hasn't been a year, you can help them refile it.
With all the details.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. If they did, then I work to explain the process and look at it. Did they still have time to appeal it if they don't agree? Are they afraid to appeal it? Did they not appeal it and they missed the timeline because they were afraid or they didn't know how and no one would help them? Because you can appeal, you can ask for an extension for appeal timelines based on good cause. And one of the best causes is if a member that doesn't have a guardian gets this piece of paper and puts it in their bedroom until one of you show up to ask them if they're okay, it might be more than 30 days and they may not know that. But if they didn't specifically ask for help, it's not the hospital's fault either. But that would be a good cause reason to extend the appeal deadline if they won't help you with the resolution. Mm-hmm. But typically, if not all of their complaints were addressed, it's because when it got to the written form that we have to dispose it to, not everything made it. So that's unfortunate. But fortunately for the member, if it all hasn't been investigated and it hasn't been a year, time's not up. So you can still file it. So that's the first thing. But really educating these folks on what their rights are. So that's, you know, when I do resident patients, and anytime I go to AFRA, I get a bunch of them. You work for, you know, and of course, they listen to their stories. But a lot of times when they're telling me it's not a grievable offense because it's not within their rights. So it's not part of the SMI grievance process. Now, it might be correct to go through a complaint. It might be correct to go through a medical appeal or a medical grievance, but not for this one. And a lot of times that's the confusion I see. So educating them on what their SMI rights are and what a grievance is. A grievance is to assert that your SMI rights have been violated.
Has this presentation been given to any of the members at ASH?
Like employees that work there?
This particular presentation, no, because I just need what we need for you.
But Jackie
does with, you have to ask her I know that outside of the patient forums, she does do patient rights education.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it. Uh-huh. This particular presentation hasn't, but... You know, some of the more frequent, again, all the special assistance members' grievances come to OHR and are our folks that write the more frequent ones. We have taken the OHR pamphlet that outlines the grievance appeal process, as my rights process, and things like that, because they're getting really frustrated when their complaints get, or their grievances get getting kicked to complaints. And but sometimes that's
even having that education, that interaction even with my office, doesn't change the fact that it feels like a right violation to that person every time something happens.
Mm-hmm.
And they have the right to go through that process, real or perceived. Remember, we talked about at the beginning, it needs to be investigated. Sometimes it's disposed of moving to the complaint process because it's not appropriate, and that's frustrating for members, but at least it was reviewed, right?
Mm-hmm.
At least they're being taken. And then if they, most of the patients have used the OHR phone number that's posted on all of the units. Some use it a lot. And some never have, but once they run into us, we encourage them to use it. Ask questions. Call an advocate, you know.
They're calling down to the legislature.
I know.
Trust me.
And one thing I want to mention also is that part of my role at the state hospital is I, for special assistance clients, patients who file grievances that contain allegations of physical or sexual abuse, I can assist them with the grievance process. So I sit in on their interviews. So it's helpful to have an advocate. And I can also sit down with them and go over the decision letter if they want.
Yeah, all the SMI members can always
refer
to OHR for, we call it technical assistance. So if they're involved in an agreement, they have something active or they think they need a file, they can always come.
Yeah, I've had.
If it rises to the level that Erica needs to get involved, it's going to be one of those physical issues.
Yeah, I've seen this month and last month a particular person that is claiming sexual abuse and allegations and things put inside her and all this, and it's never substantiated. So it seems like it's part of her delusion.
Yeah.
So I didn't bring those there because they're kind of kinky too, you know, as I read through. But anyone on the phone have any questions before CJ?
Yeah, this is Kathy Basher. CJ, I just want to say you did a stellar job as usual, and I have ultimate trust in your wisdom. Statewide, the advocates are starting to raise real serious questions to the grievance process and feel that this is really keeping the system, and mainly access that relies on data, from actually knowing what is happening within the system. Because a lot of the grievances are being squished, they're not being responded to adequately, and so there's a lot of challenges, and it has long, you know, a lot of implications. I think Ernie Pender with the OIF office at Mercy is going to take the lead in leading, you know, some of the advocates in questioning this. So I guess my question, and I hate to put you on the spot, but if you were going to make a major change with the grievance process, where would that be?
Wow. Just a little question.
Yeah, right. You know, my dream, Kathy, like with everything else, I think it should be, I think we should have a system that allows members and family members to go online, like kind of like the APS reports go, and that they could file electronically and even anonymously. Because of that point that you bring up, that lots of people in the community and that the committee members here brought up, that members are afraid of retaliation. So if I was going to change one thing, I would change that we don't have the technology to keep up with the way that people prefer to communicate right now.
Thank you, CJ.
You're welcome. Even though I know you hate computers, so you didn't like that answer.
I'm here. I mean, you guys, you can each have one. The patients that are so frightened, they won't write grievances, so they're writing letters to us now.
Mm-hmm.
And they really are afraid. They're afraid to file a grievance. So that's always worrisome.
That's anonymous, right?
Yes, that was anonymous that we had last month. And you can take it for reading. But we're going to go through rapid assist since we ran on. So here's one that I don't know whether we can file on behalf of. I was running through my rapid assessment of these 80-some pages, plus all of the decision letters, too, and seclusion and restraint. But I noticed that one particular patient number had 12 incidents of self-harm this month. So I stapled them together, and I did talk to Ash about it today, or yesterday, can't remember. And then I went back, and they had 13 in November, 6 in October, 5 in September, as I went back to look at their patient number. And I'm saying, what the hell, what the heck is going on? Why they're injuring themselves at a higher frequency now, causing, having to go to the hospital sometimes, or just doing very self-harm or attacking people.
So I know there are a few patients that are high acuity and they actually want to go to the hospital.
Yeah, it's a field trip.
And they, I mean, they do lots of intervention. And
to your point, when you see that, I would call that a trend.
Yeah.
And this may be something that you want to
ask
for more information from us. And that would be within, you know, that process. I think they have their own form for you guys to use or whatever to look further into it. If it's that concerning, I can't see the content of, like, how the person's hurting themselves, but if it's being pretty dangerous and you feel like you need to help this person, that would be maybe even asking for unredacted information so you can go talk to the person.
Yeah, I don't know whether they want to.
I don't know what their process is for you guys. I haven't spent the time to look at what they've kind of outlined for you. But if I was doing the reviewing and I saw a trend that I was concerned, so there's a little bit of difference with Eric and I review ours. We don't have the PII redaction rule, so it's easier for us to see kind of who, and then if we know who the member is, we usually have a history with them.
We're allowed to get unredacted information in the IOCU oversight.
We have to request it.
Yeah, so you're the Arizona Revised Statutes with it has always been, but the ones you guys updated last year, was it?
Yeah.
It tells you that if you need it, you need to cite the statute and request it in writing.
Yeah.
And the purpose. So if the purpose would be to, you know, investigate why the escalation, then you would just need to write all that.
Okay.
But,
they can, but 3804. Yes. 41-3804.
I think.
I believe it is.
Okay. And a lot of them that we had, I had a lot of good, because we have complaints that sometimes patients say that, or we've read through where in the report, and it's different. So we can only go by what we're reading or seeing or interviewing. Sometimes we don't see appropriate action, and then when we have the, that's why I find it helpful that Ash doesn't attend our meeting when I talk to them. Right. Sometimes we can clear it up to understand.
Oh,
so
sure.
This one person had an altered state. This was 6641, and they did send to the hospital to Valley Wise, and they did notify the garden and the next day. Then we had another self-harm that ended up at the ER, 6830, and they notified the guardian 3 days later, but I didn't have time to look at the calendar. And then this one, it was very interesting, because not identifying anything, but I work in a lot of other behavioral health groups and communities, and I've asked other psychiatrists just in general that, and the point is, seclusion is always a bad thing, and restraint is always a bad thing.
Right? I've gone through this for years with you, because I review the seclusion and restraint.
Yeah. And when I look at some of these, sometimes I think it's appropriate.
This
patient was hitting the back of their head against the wall, and they kept trying to stop this, and it. And then they started their forehead forcibly, was told that they'd call a code, and then they put him into restraints, and then he started even worse, so then he had to be four-pointed in seclusion because he wouldn't.
I saw that at St. Luke's once, and sadly enough, he had been banging his head so mm-hmm. much, and then because he put his knees up and he started banging the front, within 5 minutes of us getting him in the 4-point restraint, he had a seizure.
Mm-hmm.
And then another seizure, he ended up having to go to the emergency department. It became so severe.
Yeah. And some patients asked to go into seclusion.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then he had the same thing, you know. So,
interesting
again,
to say that.
Again, it's not always a bad thing to use seclusion. As I read through this, sometimes I'm like, put them in seclusion. And I mean, I help them out.
Yeah. But I want to say this, where I appreciate that you read that you look for those trends, because, you know, Erica reads them, we know, a lot. But...
Have you noticed, though, like St. Luke's, like different hospitals are trying to move away from that?
St. Luke's is a little... Is
very sad.
Yes.
Yeah.
A lot of them are, because it's risk and reward and policy and all of that. That's why we read all of the reports, so they chart and...
Well, I do know sometimes that the nurses are negligent in their charting, and so when I was there, my manager always pulled me in, and would say, I know that you know our system, even though it's somebody else's patient, please come in here so that you can make sure it's charted appropriately.
Yeah.
Because that's, you know, hugely important so that we can prove that we're not abusive.
Right. Right. That it's done correctly and so on. But it makes a lot of sense. I mean, one of the concerns I think that we come up with when the nurses are doing is incomplete. We can't answer the question. If you can't properly describe why would be in the intent, but not hard enough to warrant a physical restraint.
Exactly. And it is very time consuming, but you know what? That's hard job.
Yeah.
And you got to keep them.
Usually we only got to hear from Erica a couple of times. All of a sudden they turn into a very detailed, very, very detailed.
See that?
I think that for the most part, they really try to do the right thing.
Of course. CJ, you were helping me log onto the portal, and I got stuck, and I dropped the ball. So I'm going to reach out again next week.
Oh, you're probably
I'm glad you're here. You reminded me.
Okay.
I have your email.
It's been that long. It's probably expired. So, probably have to...
Start again. Okay, start all over. Then I'll email you next week.
Yeah, so, on our...
I'm only in the office on Tuesday, which is Thursday next week.
Okay.
It's a holiday, and then I'm going to get
okay.
I know you guys are trying to fit into your schedule,
yeah.
But I don't want you to feel like we're not responding.
Thanks. Awesome. Thank you very much.
We appreciate you.
Yes, thank you.
So as far as our annual report thing, which I know they really want, I have a question on myself. I wrote down things that we asked them, and when we asked for a diagnosis and severity for ASH admission, because it should be the hospital of last resort, right? It's our public hospital, and they would not give us that. But other things we've asked for, they have accommodated. I did put more information in here about what we're advocating for, and we're advocating for a new surveillance system. And Kathy, if... Do you know any type of training, because we would like and we're advocating for more training for staff so they know how to de-escalate and not escalate. We're still asking for visits on the weekends, which would help. Yeah. We think it would be really beneficial if we had legal. Well, we want to keep ADOA, our liaison. We want to make sure it doesn't go away, because there was improved communication.
So, Ryan, are you looking? I'm sorry. Are you looking for a recommendation of specific training, or just accumulation of effectiveness of trainings, or what?
When we're talking about, and I think this is important even for our call tomorrow. I think it's tomorrow. I have the call when they're trying to address all of their incidents and accidents and seclusion. That's one of the things ASH is getting dinged on, and they haven't improved. And one thing would be a recommendation, we'll bring in outside trainers. I know you have all of these training, but you said that it happened 10 years ago or more, and it was really effective.
Yeah.
It was. And what historically happens with these trainings is they're very effective for a year or two, and then they start to decline. So So, you know, and they don't really know why that happens, but do you want me to get some trainings or some information on that?
If you had the type of training that was provided, if it's any more specific than that, then I guess, because they were asking yesterday, I was being asked how much would these trainings cost if we put it in a legislative bill.
Mm-hmm.
I said, I have no idea. I have no idea. So if we, is it $10,000 or is it $100,000?
No, it was not that expensive. A group of us, including Ann Ronan and probably five of us, were sent out of state to Oregon for the training. And I know that you can find these trainings around the country, you know, that are really good and have good, you know, recommendations. And, I mean, I think $10,000 would be well within reason. If you want me to find this information out, I can do that.
That'd be great.
I was previously a CPI trainer, and I know that there's different, like, levels that you can purchase, and the highest level, it's, like, intertwined with your insurance even. But as far as just training individuals, I think it was less than $10,000. I was paid as a trainer of trainer and then trained the whole district.
Yeah.
So it was,
cool.
You know, money well spent.
Do you want me to train?
You know what? I would love to help become a trainer.
Mm-hmm.
So if I could get some direction on that.
We did the CPI and the trauma
and a nurse, I would love it.
Have you guys also looked into the Living Works training?
No.
Health First Aid, Safe Talk, SIF, those different trainings. I know Mercy Care provides training. Throughout the valley, throughout the year, and especially for assist and safe talk. But mental health first aid is just kind of like a basic.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to get that through the Red Cross.
Yeah.
We just asked for health services volunteer.
Right. So, like, the Living Works website is a good resource, and also Mercy Care provides a lot of those things, too.
Okay.
I would think that everyone that works at the hospital with no mental health first aid, I hope. I mean, I would think that everyone coming in would have some that level of knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, guys, so on the annual report, if you want to take a look at it, do we want to pass a motion to accept it? And if you find any edits, send them to me by Monday, and then I'll take that time to integrate them and send it back out. And then I'll turn it.
I sent you mine.
I put it in. Yeah, I already incorporated it.
Yeah, they were in red.
Okay.
I just added it to the annual report.
It's both sides. And then we'll get it to you because I know Larry is waiting for our report.
So it was a great job.
Oh, thank you.
It was really great. I've seen the last few years.
Thanks.
Really,
okay, anything else? I think we've gone over everything and kind of, and I don't think we have public comment, which then worries me is why the units haven't called in again. I asked last time.
Timothy Verdresco, I'm one of the units.
Yeah, 10 o'clock.
Oh, okay, I didn't know you guys were on.
Yeah, I didn't know we were able to talk until now.
You were able to talk during the grievance process because that was education, but they're gone now. But
yeah.
You have some comments about that?
Is this Timothy Maresco?
Timothy Briasco.
Oh, Briasco. Okay, thank you. Do you want your name in the note?
Yes, ma'am. And I'm on Sycamore Unit. Jackie Batchelor brought the slip around tonight, saying about the Independent Oversight Committee meeting for tonight.
Apparently.
But I did not.
I think, wait a second, Wait a second. Can everyone that's on the phone that joined the meeting, the live meeting, drop off that because it interplays with your with our recording. We're getting a lot of feedback. So if you guys drop off the computer net sharing live meeting, we'll get less feedback, and that way we can take our public comments quickly. Okay, try again, Timothy.
Jackie handed these papers out about the IOC meeting agenda today. I didn't really see, I seen that it was said for training, but I didn't know it was open for public participation, because there was a lot I had to say about grievances.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. My mother, Deborah Bykowski, is the one that Access has sent the letter to about they're not taking any more grievances, appeals, or complaints on my behalf, which I don't know. Is that legal for them to do? I don't know. But you guys said something about notifying the guardian. They never do notify my mother when I'm taken off the premises. I was taken to the hospital for a broken hand. Later, a different date for a broken foot due to an altercation. Here's one thing that I have a concern, and you said it was mainly like abuse, sexual abuse. I don't know if this would consider that, but on 11-26 of 19 and 12-3 of 19, we had searches, unit search. And on 11-26, nobody was allowed to go to the bathroom, except for me, because I take diuretics, which make me urinate a lot. We had been pat searched. We had been wanded. I'd been sitting in the hall watching them tear my house apart for probably 20 minutes. I had to use the bathroom, and they held the door open and sat there and watched me urinate. On 12-3, there were 13 of us that used the bathroom, and they held the door open, and one of the staff even went in the bathroom and halfway in and out and had to watch us urinate. I don't see how I've been sexually molested as a kid, and that threw me back into some bad memories. Just being watched, you know, it felt dirty. The medical equipment is being denied. I asked for a glucometer. They told my mother she has to provide it, which it's over $500. I feel that since I'm property of the state of Arizona until June 6th of 2039, they have to pay for my medical equipment. There's a lot of retaliation, like you guys were saying. Then they come and try and trigger you and antagonize you. The investigator tells the staff member when they come on the unit, this is the guy that wrote you up, and they sit in the office and talk 15, 20 minutes. Then they come talk to you, and then they go back and talk to them again. But I don't feel that's very, I don't know how to say it, but that staff member has questioned me, why did you write me up? I said, did you not hear from the investigator why it was? You guys were talking about putting in more surveillance cameras with audio. One place a camera needs to be in dire is the nurse's med window room. Meds have came up missing. Too much meds, not enough, none at all. Just a lot of things have been happening around there. And I've been told by one of the investigators that I have too many irons in the fire. Why are you grieving everything? Well, when it took me 10 months to get a razor, whether I have a beard or not, does not matter. I should be entitled to everything every other patient is entitled to. And that's, I grieve a lot of stuff. I guess you could say some is frivolous, but I feel if everybody else is receiving that same thing, then I should be able to too. That's about all I have. And sorry my mother wasn't able to attend tonight. She's in Colorado. And one of the things with that is I request a food visit, and policy says if my party travels more than 3 hours one way, then they're entitled to a 2-hour food visit. My social worker, Janda Lee Ike, has told me, we're not going to discuss that. Your mom's only getting 1 hour. Well, my mom lives 500 miles away from our front door to here is 500 miles exactly. She drives 8 hours, and she should be entitled to a 2-hour food visit. That's all I got to say right now. There's a lot of medical neglect going on. I could go on for hours. Maybe you guys could come see me. That'd be great. Thank you very much. Have a good night.
Thank you.
Anyone else?
I'm Rodney Woodville on SAGO unit.
Would you like your name in the notes?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
Okay.
Okay. I just have one thing here I'm going to read off because this is a complaint that I just recently, on the 5th, sent to the Arizona Board of Nursing. And I would like to read this because I don't think that the CNO or the CMO is aware of what they're doing. And I wrote this complaint, and I want to read it. And please stand by while I read this complaint. I am submitting this complaint report in lieu of possible widespread malpractice by the entire day shift nursing staff at Ash Forensics stemming from noncompliance with medication label directions. The noncompliance has arisen from food meals intake being restricted and withheld by nursing staff from all patients taking administered medication for more than 1.5 hour after taking medication labeled take with food. In other words, they're holding our breakfast for over 30 minutes until everybody finishes with their meds. So what I wrote also on this complaint that I sent in is PS, please be aware and note that I will be sending notification of this activity to all pharmaceutical corporations in the pretense that they have to be made aware and therefore share responsibility and proper care, handling, liability, use, and distribution of their products pertaining to possible medication injury class actions. Now, in one of these letters, I wrote, Dear Pfizer Pharmaceuticals, the letter of complaint report shown as attachment A was submitted to the agency listed below. I have sent this letter to your corporation so that factual evidence in case of medication injury class actions can be brought to bear on the responsible parties in lieu of your integrity and mission statement. I ask your law team work with this institution in order of the validity of this claim, whether or not this activity complies with labeling directions of your product safety and dosage. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for sharing.
Okay.
Anyone else?
My name is James Norton.
Do you want your name in the note? James?
Would you like your name listed in the notes, or would you like it anonymous?
Can you hear us, James? Oh, no. Did we lose him?
Oh, no. James, are you there? Anyone else on the phone?
Shut off,
that's what I was thinking. I wonder if...
Did it hang up on them maybe?
Kathy, anyone else you on? Are you still there?
Yes.
Okay. We're just wondering if there's anyone else that would like to speak. It seems like the unit might have dropped off. Okay, guys. Do I have a motion to adjourn? And then if you have any new business or items you want to talk about, let me know. And after I meet with the commission tomorrow on neglect and abuse, I'll do a write-up and send it out to the committee on what the recommendations are. And are you guys interested in, do you want me to copy you on proposed legislation and bills that are being
sure.
proposed to try to help Ash and help with, I think there's also one, if I recall correctly, that's asking for
budget
increase or pay increase for over there so maybe it can fill that vacancy gap and retain people. Okay, call to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn from Ashley. Second?
I second.
Leon seconds. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? We'll order breakfast now. Okay, thank you guys. Thank you on the phone.
Good night, everyone.
Thank you.
Good night.